द्वैताद्वैत महामोह सर्वरीक्षपणक्षमः भास्वानिव जयत्येको गणेशो दूतरीयुत प्रतिभायाः परोल्लासो निशाकर इवापरः दूतीयुक्तः स जयतु बटुकस्तांडवान्वित। ओम शांति शांति शांति। सो द टॉपिक फॉर दिस इवनिंग इज पर्सनल प्रैक्टिस फॉर ए मीनिंगफुल चेंज। If you look at history, any time, anywhere, there has been any meaningful change, it is only under the leadership of someone who was fully committed to personal practice. There have been changes in the field of politics by political leaders. It never lasted for too long. In commercial realm, there have been some very innovative ideas. Those ideas did not last for too long. I will share with you a living example of Buddha. He was committed to practice. Before attaining enlightenment, Buddha did not have any plan for fixing the world. He was interested in fixing himself. It is in attempt to bring change in himself. He did everything which we know that he had done. He made sacrifices. His very first sacrifice was to leave his own home. The fact that he was not an escapist is evidenced when he attained enlightenment. He went back to his kingdom. He did not so-called ignored or neglected his wife and the child and the rest of the family and the people of his kingdom, just as very many other monks or people in monastic order do. They make a deliberate effort. Quite often we have seen people make a deliberate effort to quote, not to look behind. Huge amount of energy goes in making sure that they are not associating themselves with their past. And this idea of not associating with themselves with their past always applies with their loved ones. Those who had been very near and dear to them once. Buddha did not do that. So number one, first thing we should learn, that personal practice is very important. Fixing the whole world, changing the world is not as important as changing oneself, because it is only upon changing oneself a human being will have capacity to change the rest of the world. Number one. Number two, you do not need to make a big effort to do so. You do not need to work very hard to change others. If change has really occurred in your own personal life, then this newly cultivated energy will find its way to influence others. And that will begin with those who are nearest in your circle. If you are making an effort to change others, then it means something is not completed within yourself. That's why you have to work so hard. You have to convince. You have to make so many citations. You have to make references. You have to find scientific evidence. You have to find some support from the scriptures. You have to work very hard to prove yourself. That is a sign and symptom that the thing that you are trying to tell others has not been fully digested by you. That's what happened to Buddha. There are five great friends that had started with Buddha. Buddha and five more. And all of them were very, very committed to their own personal practice. But at some point, they began to watch in Buddha that there was some change in him. And the change was that he was no longer rigid. There was a time when, in attempt to bring change in himself, he followed the path of rigidity, austerity, even to the point of self-immolation. But he was very, very clear about one thing, that goal is more important than the path. It is important to cross the river, whether by holding on to a rope or by rowing a boat. And once the river has been crossed, then it is important not to carry the boat on one's head, but rather thereafter begins another kind of journey, that is walk on the ground and continue walking until you reach your destination. So they noticed. His friends noticed that this man, once who was so adamant about his austerities or austere life, suddenly he started eating a little bit. And not only that, he is eating the food given by women. He was on the path of renunciation. And he had made a commitment to eat only what he gets in alms by begging. Somebody is bringing food to him and he's eating. Instead of going outside in the village, knocking at different doors, So one day, this question was asked. So those five people, five friends, what's wrong with you? He said, I just came to realize that the purpose of my living this kind of life style is to achieve inner peace, clarity of mind, and train the mind to flow smoothly and effortlessly inward. I did not ask people nearby to bring food to me. And just like you, a thought had flashed in my mind that I should reject her offerings. Then another thought came. Siddhannam parityajya bhiksham atati durmatihi. Beautiful passage he spoke. That what a idiot I am. That such a well-done food brought to me with so much love, I'm renouncing that food in the favor of going door to door, asking for alms. Who could be duller than me? The answer was, of course, much simpler, straightforward. Those people left. Buddha was not affected by it. Next point in Buddha's life. That before he settled down to work in one place, that is today's Bodhi Gaya, for his practice, he had visited very many teachers. He had attended very many ashrams. He had studied very many paths of his spirituality and philosophy. And many times he was accused of being unloyal to teachers. That's what we often see in our own personal quest. We learn from different teachers. Another is not criticizing that what kind of low-grade student that you are, that you do not have faith in your teacher. No? People fail to see the positive aspect of this quest, that you have faith in knowledge, faith in learning. That is why you are trying to read different texts, interact with different people. If you are debating and if you are trying to impose yourself and if you are trying to prove that you know you are smarter than others, then definitely that's wrong. But if your intention is to learn, that's a very good thing. But most important thing that we learn from Buddha is that he attained enlightenment. But what he did after that is the important thing. He came back to the same world which he once had left. And without imposing himself on those people, those whom he had left, he just came closer to them. That's all. Perhaps he must have been asked people, or people must have had some questions regarding what's wrong with you, Buddha. Of course, it takes a long time somebody to be addressed as Buddha. And I'm quite sure that during his own lifetime, he was not called Buddha. But rather, whatever their name, Shakya Muni, those who are very close to him, those who had respect for him, love for him, those who understood him thoroughly, they may have called him Muni, the saint. Shakya Muni. That's how the ancient scriptures talk about, and that is how when you are in Southeast Asia, you know, that is Burma, Myanmar, Cambodia, Laos, China, Japan, Philippines, Tibet, in all those places. His name is Shakya Muni, the saint from Shakya clan. So people must have been wondering, what does he want? No. Well, he left this kingdom. He left us. He left the world. Now why is he coming back? So Buddha very simply must have said, Sangham Saranam Gacchami. I seek help. I seek love. I seek friendship from Sangha, from the community. No matter what I am, no matter who I am, no matter what I have become, I am still part of this world. And those who are very near and dear to me, those who are around me, they are my family. No matter how many languages we speak, no matter how many times we tell, in how many languages, and how artfully, the truth is that we are codependents on each other. There is not a single human being in the world who in absolute sense is totally independent. We cannot make our own clothes. If we do so, then there is not much time left to build our house. If we do so, there is not much time left to read books. If we do so, there is not enough time to go and learn the entire science and technology behind the electricity to illuminate our house. If we do so, then there is not much time left to manufacture our own vehicles. List can go on. So whether we are sadhus, we are lawyers, we are doctors, we are businessmen, we are homemakers, whoever we are so dependent on others regarding our existence. Okay. Even if, let's say, we have complete power of manufacturing dollars, but there is no tomato available, there is no salt available, there is no water available. With this $100 million in cash, we cannot really survive. This is a reality. So Buddha said, Sangham Saranam Gacchami. No? I seek help, collaboration, cooperation, guidance, sustenance, and protection from Sangha, from the community, from the society. That must have been mind-blowing to those who had thought that on the path of enlightenment, you are actually seeking freedom, and freedom means that you are absolutely independent and you don't need anything from anybody. That is called arrogance. People hear lectures. Once you have found God, then you are no longer in need of anything. That's very, very sweet sounding thing. But the truth is that as long as you are alive, you need water, you need air, you need space, you need food, you need a bed, and the germs, bacteria, and virus really don't distinguish. They don't care who is enlightened and who is not enlightened. They do exactly whatever, you know, their nature is. So as an enlightened person, still you get all the problems just as anybody else gets those problems, and therefore you need a doctor, you need medicine, and you need sympathy, you need care, you need love, you need affection. This is what we need to learn from Buddha. And thus Buddha started. So-called movement without starting a movement. He just started sharing what he had achieved. And that was extremely simple. And what was that? So simple? That my friends, I have come to really see that there is suffering everywhere. Now, how simple is this truth? Is there anywhere, is anyone in the world can come forward and dispute and challenges you in debate? Come on, where do you think that there is suffering? I don't have any suffering. Buddha said, yes, that's very good. You don't have now. Hopefully, you are honest. But life began with a great deal of pain. It's such a divine grace that we don't remember it. At that time, when we are being born, that time, the labor pain is so painful to the mother. But we hardly, because we have no way of really communicating with the baby. And therefore, baby doesn't tell us and we don't know exactly what's happening. But that was turning, twisting, squeezing. That's got to be very painful. Very, very painful. Small little body. So tender. So helpless looking. Muscles are not even trained to stretch themselves. Legs are still not stretching. No. And in that kind of circumstance, baby has to pass, you know, how many 6 inches, 9 inches in diameter head has to pass through 4, 5, 6 inches to 8 inches space. Imagine, friends, it's very good to be brave, very strong. Buddha says, very good to be brave, strong, determined, assertive, positive, enthusiastic. But it's not good to forget that undenying truth. That is, we started painfully. One day, you will die, and death is always accompanied by some undesirable degree of discomfort. This kind of answer is so straightforward and so convincing that if out of 100, one person talks like this, tries to dispute, 99 stand up and say, hey, calm down, let me, please. Will you stop disturbing the classroom? It is such a compelling statement. But also there is another truth. Whole life we remain in a state of forgetfulness regarding this truth. That's why we continue doing whatever we have been doing. We look back, 40, 50, 60 years have gone by and still we never paid any attention. Oh my God, it's really true. I have to really start looking. I have to start bringing some change in myself. I must do so. But only thing is that, you know, tomorrow or next week such and such thing is happening. Once that is completed, then I will start my journey to bring that change. Then suddenly 1 week is gone, 2 weeks is gone, 10 weeks are gone, and then 52 weeks are gone, and then, you know, 104 weeks are gone. Buddha is reminding that this is a reality. Buddha is also telling that don't be discouraged. There is cause behind it, and as soon as you remove that cause, you will be free from pain. And state of mind, state of body, free from pain, is very, very, very delightful. So simple. And thus, in a country where there were thousands of people as influential, if not even more influential than Buddha, it is in that country and society, Buddha outshone everyone. India had been a country blessed with extremely profound scriptures. Even during the time of Buddha, there had been great, great scholars, great teachers, great many books, and great many traditions. But there was something so special about Buddha. That Buddha went forward in his teachings. Similarly, very many other reformative changes are introduced. They don't go anywhere. Because those who are introducing those changes, they themselves don't practice it. Once upon a time, here at the institute, there came a quite unassuming Swami. He was sitting in the dining hall. I walked in, I saw somebody, Indian looking gentleman with Swami clothes. I went. Somehow he recognized me. He had read my books, seen pictures everywhere. So when I arrived, I exchanged my regards. So he got up, he introduced himself. Later on, I discovered that he is still there. He is one of very, very, very prominent Swami Mahamandaleshwar from Varanasi. Very educated. Normally, Swamis are not known for higher education. No, in India. He had his PhD degree and all those things. And he was quite young, not very old. It happened almost like maybe 15 years ago or so. So what I learned, amazing thing about him, through him, not about him, rather through him. That this Ramayana movie that was made in early 80s, I think. Very, very, very famous movie. It's actually television serial. It has 48 or 98, some long, big series. Extremely popular, very popular. It was so popular that when the serial came, and in those days, television sets were not so popular in India. It was a rare, very rare commodity. So when the serial came, offices used to stop, close down. Shops used to close down. Trains used to stop at the railway stations so that the passengers can watch televisions on the platforms. Buses used to stop. Truck drivers used to stop their trucks and wait for 10 in the morning television. Serial, it used to come for 30 minutes every Sunday, I think. Or maybe other days. So what happened was, what I learned, that how this Swami became Swami, how this Swami, simple Swami became very, celebrity Swami, who was here at the Institute. Because the producers and the actors of that Ramayana serial, they came to Varanasi to promote the Ramayana. Now the public had gotten the idea, and it was really, whenever the Ramayana, the movies, you know, the first used to come, they had maybe around 30 seconds or maybe 1 minute of some same thing all the time coming first, the main identifying feature. Rama, Sita, they come, they are sitting on the throne, beautifully dressed Sita and Rama. And then at that time, the people used to, just like, you know, you go to India, Varanasi Rishikesh or Haridwar, there is Ganga Aarti in the evening. Jai Jagadish Hare, Swami Jai Jagadish Hare. So same thing here with Ramayana. People used to come out with their all flowers and garlands and doing the puja of the television. That much impact it had made. Momentary impact. So the people really had started identifying the actor, one who was playing Rama and the actress who was playing Sita, as real Rama and Sita. And the producer was hailed as a great soul. In the evening, however, in Varanasi, they reserved a restaurant and they ordered all kinds of food and drink. Suddenly the word leaked out. Varanasi was in complete turmoil. Catch hold of them, beat them up, kill them, they are fake, they are hypocrites, oh God. It was just total chaos. Somehow they escaped and landed in a totally unpopular, unknown ashram. And the sadhu in that ashram, in the middle of night when everything was dark, managed to transport them to nearest city of Allahabad. And from there, they were somehow transported back to Delhi and escaped all the way to Mumbai. Of course, they were good people, those actors, actresses, no doubt, at another level. And they rewarded the Swami quite amply, you know. Swami also became very popular Swami. Ramayana movie. Ramayana itself is very amazing text. And it looked like a great change was underway due to this movie, due to these characters. But hardly any change. Evidence that India is a country of one of the country of one of the highest prevalence of rapes. What happened to Sita? What happened to Rama? All these things that we are seeing, we saw that what all these things that were being conveyed through all these characters and things, it did not go anywhere. Practice is very important. If we are practitioners, we do not need to shout that here I did something so special. Look at my life. Better you also follow and you will benefit too. No, you don't need to say that. It's very evident. Very evident. Mother does not need to keep telling her child that I love you and see here is the evidence that I give you my milk, I nurse you, look at how much I love you, I give you this bottle, I give you this toy. No, those things are totally immaterial. Okay? Totally immaterial. Personal practice is the first and the foremost step in bringing any change, especially in our personal life. Sharing that change is not really something that we need to work very hard. It is there. We are here in the United States of America. I've been watching for the last 40 years how changes have occurred. There was a time when we started our life of yoga. Ralph and Mary Gale, as co-directors, ran meditation center in Minneapolis for many, many years. At that time, I don't think that there was even one single employee. Everybody was. Ralph, do you remember, was anybody employee at that time? I don't recall anybody. It's just volunteers, little stipend here, there. But now, hardly there are yoga centers. No. And also, most of the centers were either not registered, even if they were registered, they were often not for profit. Things have changed. It is in that kind of environment by now. Still, we have Himalayan Institute. How little we advertise about what we are doing and why and how it is so important, and yet, so many of you are here. Why? My answer will be very simple. We practice more, talk less. That's our publicity and marketing strategy. And it works. We ourselves are living example. Therefore, what is the core of our personal practice? All of us are driven by our two sets of inherent qualities and properties, dharmas. One is that is of general nature, which all of us we share in common. And another one is something very personal. As human beings, we share some qualities which are common to all human beings. Based on that, there are certain principles of dharma, certain principles of right way of living and being, which help us remind ourselves that we are human beings, which help us cultivate those higher virtues and qualities of human, our humanness. And then there are our unique qualities. Those unique qualities make a big difference in terms of selecting our unique paths. our physical capacities, emotional maturity, our intellectual comprehension, our philosophical and spiritual or religious backgrounds play a great role in determining what kind of practice will be most suitable to us. In fact, what is suitable to us is very, very simple. Whatever our mind likes certain things we are drawn to, that is very clear indication that this is what we are made of. Our similar attracts similar. Sadrasham cheshtate swasya. Similar attracts similar. Our needs are very unique. Our personal needs are very unique. Yeah. And in attempt to find and fulfill those needs, automatically we are drawn to certain kind of practices more than other practices. Therefore, we don't really have to worry too much about what kind of practice we should be doing. Our own conscience will tell us which particular type of practice is most appropriate for us. And in fact, there is much, much, much higher intelligence within us and outside us, all around us. That higher reality arranges exactly what we need currently. Right kind of book, right kind of tape, right kind of show, right kind of emails, right kind of teacher. Just walks into our life. Just as right kind of community, right kind of society, right kind of family, right kind of parent walk into our life and they pave our way to this world. We enter this world in a very amazing way. Some higher realities out there making sure that, you know, the soul gets all that he or she needs in order to be born and in order to be raised. Similarly, regarding our spiritual quest, same very reality also makes sure that right kind of practice, right kind of teachings comes to us in right manner, at right time, in right way. So really don't have to worry too much about it. What we need to know that what is there that we must do in order to benefit from our practice most. That is where many of us become negligent. So we have in certain traditions there is a greater emphasis on mantra, in other traditions more emphasis on prayer, in some other traditions more emphasis on self-reflection, in some other traditions more on hatha yoga, more on breathing, more on selfless service, more on devotion, more on rituals, in some other traditions some other techniques. That is perfectly fine. All of those traditions are just perfectly fine. Is one better than the other? That's totally irrelevant question, because there is nothing like one being better than the other. It depends that what is good for us, what is good for you and what is good for me. That depends on what I'm made of, what you are made of, what my needs are, what your needs are, what your problems are, what my problems are. And all of us will figure out in our own unique way what kind of practice, what kind of prayer, what kind of asana, what kind of breathing, what kind of exercise, what kind of charity, what kind of selfless action we should be performing in order to really comply with the voice of our heart. It is very natural. What is important here, how to protect all that which we are gathering through our practice. How to make sure that we create an environment deep inside ourselves as well as outside us, which is conducive to our practice. And conducive means here simply one thing. How not to let our current strength, vitality of our body and mind, sharpness of our mind, clarity of our mind, how not to let these things drain. And for that, Again, let's go back to Buddha, and let's go back to Patanjali, let's go back to very, very great ancient masters, even modern masters and teachers. Anyone who has seen the power of simple, simple truth. Those are, I will say, just three things, or maybe four things. Sutra 133. Practicing, applying the principle of Maitri, Karuna, Mudita, and I will write it in kind of in parentheses, Upeksha. Upeksha. This last one. This is described in chapter 1 of the Yoga Sutra, Sutra 133. And then also it is, again, it comes in chapter 2, Sutra, I think 33, 34. I think so, yeah. Maitri, friendship. These are great tests in our life. Just practicing friendliness in our life. Friendliness toward who? In fact, toward anybody and everybody. But all these great teachers and texts and scriptures are telling us practicing friendliness toward those who appear to be happy, successful. If somebody is successful and happy, and you just simply know that somebody is happy and successful in Japan, and you don't know, you have never been to Japan, you have nothing to do with Japan, and some Japanese people are having a wonderful time, it really doesn't bother you. Don't have much, you don't expect much from them. But if your brother, but your sister, your neighbor is having all the great fun and you are not, it's painful. Some of these simple sounding teachings don't make much sense in this culture because people are normally not that miserable here. There must have been a totally different environment during the time of Jesus Christ when he said, love your neighbor as thyself. There must have been a great degree of problems with the next door neighbors. Either there are people surrounded by poor people, or there are or surrounded by rich people, successful people, more miserable people, or very affluent people. In either case, there is a sense of inequality, and inequality breeding as a breeding ground for many of the negative tendencies. Or let's say awakening the negative tendencies that we already have. In normal circumstance, we do not notice that we have any problem with anybody. But as you can see, lots of examples out there. People have problems with their family members. People talk about that I did not have a great relationship with my mother or father or uncle or sister. Two sisters get in fight, call police. Okay. Why? This element of friendship, which is the ground for living as a social being, is somewhat damaged. You do not notice it when you are just by yourself. But it is only when you are placed next to someone else and you have no choice but to live with one more person, then you begin to see the dynamic. It just comes forward. And if there are 3, 4, or 5 people, that's when more than five, paanch, char paanch te laskar aave. Whenever you have 4, 5 and more than seven, in fact, even in modern business world, there is very standard process and phenomena that as soon as you have 12 or more employees in your business, entire dynamics changes. This is very, very standard phenomena. And you need a different set of rules to run your business than what you used when there were less than 11 employees and colleagues to work with. See, why? Because that's when the dynamic changes. And you have a great opportunity to see what is inside you. What part of you does not have the tolerance to see anybody else next to you? So that is why even in monastic order, at certain point in people's aspirants' personal journey, they were asked to go and live in a community. You go and get some training as a jump start somewhere in a quieter place. Then you go in an environment that affords an opportunity for you to see your own reflection. And that community has to be a little bit bigger community, 4, 5, 10, 15 people's community. That is when you will begin to see how much negativity, how much element of animosity you have. Animosity not toward a particular person or particular thing, just sheer animosity. And that sheer animosity will figure it out how to latch itself onto someone and something. It will create that condition. There you try your best. Learn as much as you can learn about yourself. And if it is unmanageable, then come back. Go back to the same quiet place where you had started your journey first. Few months of solitude, few months of, cave dwelling, Although I have not seen those caves which are comfortable enough, convenient enough to do any practice, and especially if you are born and have lived and have become comfortable with modern conveniences, then all the caves in the world, including in the high Himalayas, they are very, very, very difficult place to live and definitely not conducive to any sadhana, any practice. They are pilgrimage sites. Go, pay your homage, breathe in the energy that once existed in the past, and if you have ability to connect yourself with the past, then you can energize your present and come back to the same familiar world and enjoy. This is reality. So this is what Buddha, first thing Buddha said, Sangham Saranam Gacchami. I seek guidance, I seek love, I seek support, I seek nourishment, I seek protection from Sangha, from community. It's a wonderful place to be. Nothing could be a greater place for me to know myself than the community, where things are, nature has arranged things in a manner where it's easy for me to see my own reflection. Practice Maitri. Yoga Sutra chapter 3 tells us, Maitriyadisu Balani. By practicing Dharana, Dhyana and Samadhi, concentration, meditation and Samadhi, on principles like Maitri, Karuna, Mudita, Maitri, Karuna and Mudita, we become strong. And any change in the world, in our own personal life or in our impersonal life, inside us or outside us, change requires that we are strong. A weak person, a frail person, does not have much chance to bring any change, because change requires strength, energy, determination. Strength comes when we are established in the principle of Maitri, friendship. That means we have eliminated or subdued, or at least we have minimized this one leakage point that is called animosity, ill feeling, negativity itself. Of course, our smart mind tells us, I'm not negative, it's this person who does this thing to me, otherwise I'm very wonderful soul. I don't really hurt anybody, no. But what can I do? She's like that, he's like that. Maitri, Karuna. So much cruelty out there. See what I just said? So much cruelty out there. It is so amazing that it never occurs to us that so much cruelty in here. But wherever it is, any cruelty that we see in the outside world is actually an extension of the cruelty that is contained inside those individuals. And it is, nothing is more contagious than cruelty. We talk about contagious disease, but this is extremely contagious. One single spark is given, and the cruelty inside us is aroused. Then suddenly, it happens to the next person, next person, next person, next person. And in no time, we are sucked into this mass hysteria, mob mentality just grips us. If we are not careful, then anytime, anywhere, a killer, a murderer, an extremist, a Hitler, a Mussolini, is born right inside us. Paying attention to the possibility of those dark forces somewhere deep inside us, making an effort to discover and subdue that beast, is an integral part of any practice that we commit to. Next, cheerfulness, mudita. Every little thing makes us unhappy. It's like we are waiting to be sad. That That's how mind latches on things, not to things. How long our mind dwells on worry, sadness, grief, and sorrow. How many justifications are presented to us by our intellect regarding our sadness? That is an indication that how attached we are to those things. We go on reminding ourselves that such and such community, such and such family, such and such group of people have harmed our ancestors, our society, our community, and we are not going to forgive. As though if revenge is such a great gift that we must preserve it. And thus, just sit and grieve again and again and again. And spirituality that we are talking about is something just get over with quickly and fast. How long, how many years? 1 year, 2 years, 5 years, 20 years, 30 years do we take, do we need to heal? That injury or undesirable experience that had happened. We don't put a limit. We don't think that way quite often. We go through a process without really paying attention. How long that process should be? Is the goal of this whole thing is to continue to stay in that process or to use the process to go beyond? Should I get healed quickly so that my energy is available to me to do something productive? Or just because somebody tells me or some system of therapy tells me that it is a process. Sit down and discuss again and again and again and again. 1 year, 2 years, 5 years, 10 years, whole lifetime. And then by that time, it has become part of our habit. And when we are dying, we are sad and filled with sorrow. Just because such and such person had abandoned me. Who cares that such and such person abandoned me? No. One day, my own body is going to abandon me. My own mind is going to abandon me. Isn't that I should start preparing myself that regardless who abandons me and who doesn't abandon me, I should find that completely independent, pure and autonomous state of consciousness, which is untouched by any kind of grief and sorrow and things like that. Cheerfulness, that the sadhus say, be happy even if you are behind the bars. I'm already behind the bars. I'm already being punished. Should I punish myself extra by being unhappy and sad behind the bars? You know, it's an attitude that we have to cultivate. The point is here, there is a way of cultivating cheerfulness and happiness. If you cannot cultivate inside yourself, then expecting somebody else to give you happiness, it's a complete disaster, source of, you know, frustration and disappointment in life. If we have cultivated these three, Maitri, Karuna, and Mudita. And just a little bit, quote, indifference. Just don't engage yourself in a business which is none of your business. Set your priorities. Is your job to become a good person or is your job to go and discover all the sinners in the world? You know, what is your top priority? With these fourfold attitude, especially the first three ones, Maitri, Karuna, and Mudita, you do your practice and you will succeed. What will happen? You will become a wonderful person with no sense of animosity, no feeling of animosity toward anybody, and automatically the energy that is spontaneously being emitted from you will influence your surrounding, and a change will occur in the world outside you. However, it is only in proportion to the change that has already occurred inside you. Similarly, Karuna, compassion, practice compassion. Practicing compassion means, practicing compassion begins from avoiding practicing cruelty. Become sensitive. Create sensitivity for others, comforts and discomforts. Sharing somebody's discomfort does not mean that you also become uncomfortable. Sharing others' pain does not mean that you inflict pain on yourself. It is a mental attitude to have the intention of easing others' pain and doing anything possible that is within your capacity to help others. That's called practicing compassion. Active way of loving, caring, giving, and serving is called compassion. When you start practicing, then you will come to know that the element contrary to compassion is in there in you. But your intention is now not to have them, therefore automatically the energy that is gained through your own conviction, your own intention, as well as your own methodical practice of spiritual discipline will create a totally new field of energy in you, and that will start neutralizing the non-compassionate energy that is in you and automatically giving rise to the field of compassion in you. And once it starts emitting from you, automatically the world outside you becomes much, 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 you know, wonderful place. And again, remember, it is in proportion to the virtue of compassion that has been cultivated inside you, the world outside you will be influenced. Then comes cheerfulness. It is a matter of forming the habit of not holding on to undesirable, painful memories. In practice, it is a process of letting go and allowing the forces of healing forces to take their course. Heal you faster, more healed you are, the more happier, more cheerful you will be, easier it will be for you to maintain that cheerfulness. It's a very, very amazing process. Which one comes first? Should you become more cheerful first so that you have less interest in holding on to the pain, or first you let the pain go so that you have more capacity to hold on to cheerfulness? It's a, I think, simultaneous process that goes back and forth, back and forth. However, the end result is that you begin to reach that place inside yourself which is called Anandamaya Kosha, where there is joy. And the more established you are in that state of awareness, automatically the world outside you becomes, you know, more joyful. In that joyful climate, then you have again next degree of, next level of opportunity to discover the joy within yourself. And again, your inner joy reflects on the outside joy, and the outside, the joyful atmosphere begins to aid and support your own joyful states inside yourself. And as soon as these three are put in place, the fourth one, upeksha, that becomes a natural process. Automatically you begin to mind your business. You don't have, taste left, to go after anybody, especially those who are weaker than you, those who seem to be downtrodden people, those who seem to be less virtuous. You really don't, you still consider them human beings. That's all, children of God, children of the divine, you know. And automatically there's prayer for everyone in your heart, you know. And you begin to pay less and less attention to others, and you begin to pay more and more attention to yourself, and that's what begins to reflect on the world outside, you know, you. And everybody begins to pay attention to themselves, and everybody's, you know, as a group begins to move forward. This is why personal practice is the way for any meaningful change. Without that, too much talk, too much maneuvering, too much so-called tactful action, which is just simply politically being savvy, you know, that doesn't lead us too far. Summary of this whole discussion is practice, 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 practice to be accompanied by Maitri, Karuna, Mudita, and Upeksha, and the spontaneous, effortless effort to share what you have and let that spontaneous, effortless sharing speak for itself. When you say and force others to hear you, you will fail. When you demonstrate things through your action and don't ask anybody to pay attention to you, and yet the natural laws of natural forces of the universe automatically create an environment where people begin to pay attention to you. And remember, they will pay attention to you only in proportion to your love, compassion, and friendliness that you have for all. That is the secret of personal practice. Which mantra, which techniques, which kind of visualization, which prayer, which asana, which breathing technique, you know, which scripture, which teacher, which church, which mosque, all they are beautiful, however, only in proportion to these inner virtues that you have cultivated through Maitri, Karuna, Mudita, and Upeksha. Thank you. God bless you all.